We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome into Candlestick Chronicles, a 49ers podcast on the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Kyle Madsen. I write about the 49ers over at NinersWire.com, part of the USA Today Sports Media Group. Joining me shortly is Chris Biederman of the Sacramento Bee. And as always, we are sponsored by Oakley. Express your style and build a look that's made for you. You know how much I like Oakley? I moved to Oakley. Yeah, Oakley, California. I went, I need to live there. That's how much I love my Oakleys. Do you run, golf, train, or maybe you just want to look like Debo Samuel, who wears Oakleys? I respect that a lot. Suited for everyday eyewear with frames and lenses, allowing for an extension of self, an expression of your personality. There's more than meets the eye. And that's true. Like, you can wear them for sports. You can wear them for yard work. I do that. Wear them for driving. Wear them just to, like, enhance my look. When I'm like, what a bad face day, I'm going to put on these sunglasses and improve my face. And listen up, because it's officially almost summer, which means you need to upgrade your sunglasses now. Get that sunglass game up. Check out Oakley.com to get yourself a pair today. The Holbrooks, I bring them up every time. I'm right there. The Sutros are very dope as well. I need to cop a pair of those, but I've got my Holbrooks. And if you're just looking for a classic looking pair of shades, those are the ones. Oakley even offers prism technology. And what the hell is that, you ask? We're going to find out together. It's a proprietary technology to Oakley and available for everyday settings as well. And if you want to know more, because I know you do, head on over to Oakley.com and do your own damn research, people. And while you're there, get yourself a pair of everyday glasses that'll be sure to change your look for the better. When you wear Oakley, there is more than meets the eye. Don't trust me. Try for yourself. I've worn a lot of sunglass brands in my life, like a whole bunch of them. And I'm going to show you that Oakley is not only the best looking, but the best quality out there. Head on over to Oakley.com for more information today. So we're going to get in. There's a little bit of news that we'll dive into, and then we're going to talk about the players who need to step up for the 49ers this year. But real quick off the top, before we dive into that, I wanted to clear something up because it wasn't sitting right with me. Something I brought up in the last episode, we were talking about OTAs and observations from OTAs. And the point I was trying to convey was that fans and consumers should not take these OTA observations necessarily as gospel for the rest of the season, but more as just to paint a picture of kind of where things are heading into training camp. And a great OTA performance does not mean a great training camp performance is coming. It does not mean that a player is guaranteed a roster spot or anything like that. That's more what I was trying to convey. And I think I did a really bad job of going about that. I don't want to discredit the people who are on the ground and working as the eyes and ears for people who are not there, making the observations, pointing out things that they see, things they notice. That's super valuable and it's very much appreciated. And I wanted to make sure that that was very, very clear because I think I did a bad job of conveying my point on our last pod. So shout out to everybody who is covering OTAs and giving out their thoughts and feelings on their various platforms. It is immensely appreciated to people like me who are not there. So thank you, everybody who is out there putting in that work. All right, let's dive into the pod.
Hey, this is George Kittle, and you're listening to Candlestick Chronicles.
Kittle in Denver territory! Kittle is gonna go! Touchdown!
Close has got him, and a sack him back inside the 30-yard line! 18-yard loss.
Quick pass caught by Kittle. He dives, and he's in. Touchdown, 49ers.
Hey, Chris, you'll never believe this.
What up?
Jimmy Garoppolo had surgery. Can I just real quick, and there's 49ers related stuff, like Jimmy Garoppolo maybe being out till training camp and maybe beyond is not, doesn't matter for this podcast. But there's a couple things in here in this story. Tayshaun Reed and Vic Tafer in The Athletic reported that Jimmy Garoppolo had surgery on his foot injury that he suffered in week 13 against the Dolphins. And there's a couple Niners related nuggets in here. And this is reported in The Athletic. First thing that jumped out to me, it's a tough look for the Niners doctors and training staff that Garoppolo was, they feared that he was going to need surgery, but then the team doctor evaluated it, said like, no, this type of fracture doesn't need surgery. He's good to go in 2 months. And it's now well past 2 months and he needed surgery. That's just kind of a tough go. And maybe he did something to it since then that made it worse. But that was the first thing that stood out to me here.
Are we going to see Jimmy Garoppolo in the joint practices with the Niners and Raiders this summer? Is really...
Ooh. What's is Jimmy Garoppolo... Did he have the surgery deliberately to duck the 49ers?
Is he trying to miss getting picked off by Fred Warner three times during training camp? No, I mean, it sucks, but it, like I was telling you, I had completely forgotten there was so much weirdness around Jimmy Garoppolo signing the actual contract and the introductory press conference in Vegas, right? Because apparently, if you go back and read the story, and I'd forgotten about this, but like, Jimmy went to the facility to sign the contract and then left and was supposed to have the introductory press conference that day and then left without signing the contract or having the press conference. And everyone's like, what's happening? This is a little weird. And now it comes out he had surgery in March. So I don't know. I don't know if he aggravated the injury. I don't know if the 49ers training staff and doctors mishandled or misdiagnosed the injury, but it's sort of like in general, it just kind of speaks to one of the key reasons the 49ers wanted to move on was just that lack of reliability.
Yep.
Right. Like Jimmy's had like injuries throughout his time. And that's ultimately a reason why they're moving on. And ironically enough, now the 49ers have largely pin their hopes on a guy who's recovering from major elbow surgery. So
unreal.
they just can't catch a break or are catching too many breaks, depending on how you want to look at this. But I don't know. It's, I like Jimmy a lot. Nice dude. But this is like, it just feels like a very like Raiders type thing to happen. Be like, all right, we're going to give this quarterback a $72 million contract, but he's not going to be able to sign it. We're not sure about his physical. And, oh, he had surgery last month. We're not, and we're going to pretend like we knew that it was happening and we were totally fine with it all along. When in reality, the Raiders probably signed him, realized his foot wasn't as good as they initially thought, or maybe he had a setback. And then it's like, well, shit, now we're in a scenario where we might not have our new starting quarterback until training camp. And Brian Hoyer is going to be working as our starter throughout the offseason program. It's not really where you want to be.
I don't get it. I don't.
We just don't have all the information. You know, like, yeah. I think it's probably pretty straightforward, but nobody is going to be too forthcoming when it comes to all the information behind this, because the Raiders would never admit. And I know Josh McDaniels said on the record, like, oh, this is, we knew everything that was happening with Jimmy's foot when we signed him. It's like, yeah, that's obviously what you say, but there's a pretty good chance that you're not giving him a $72 million contract if you knew he was going to need surgery and you knew he wasn't going to be available till training camp.
That means we were dangerously close to Jimmy Garoppolo just re-signing with the Niners. Because
Jimmy Garoppolo, Jimmy Garoppolo taking the Brandon Allen spot. It's the fourth. Jimmy Garoppolo, Trey Lance, and Sam Darnold competing to back up Brock Purdy?
Jimmy Garoppolo, more or less talented of a thrower than Sam Darnold.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, that's... No,
the other thing that jumped out here was... Remember that whole thing? Like, look. The Niners kept Garoppolo active and did not place him on injured reserve because they had maximized the they had hit the maximum number of players that they could return from IR. So if Jimmy Garoppolo had gone on IR when he went down with the injury, his season would have been over. They would not have been able to activate him. And that's where this whole thing with the Niners team doctor being like, yeah, he's good to go in 2 months. If they go to the NFC Championship game or the Super Bowl, he'll be able to come back. It's like, clearly not.
They, yeah,
more or less, and I don't want to say wasted a roster spot because there wasn't somebody they were going to add in week 14 who was going to make a huge difference. Like, I don't want this to be that dramatic. But at the same time, they kept him active. They didn't use his roster spot because they had this inkling that he would be able to play if he was needed in the Super Bowl. And let's say Josh Johnson stays healthy and the Niners go on to beat the Eagles. I don't think Garoppolo is going to be available. It would have been Josh Johnson in the Super Bowl. And like Jacob Eason is
You think
backup.
Josh Johnson is beating the Eagles? Had he stayed healthy in the 49ers and winning that game? Okay.
No. Okay. No, that's not, I'm sorry. That was not what I was trying to say.
I got you.
I'm saying in the event that he stays healthy, right. And then also separately, in the event that they somehow won the game, they would have gone into the Super Bowl very likely with Josh Johnson as QB1. Because I don't think Jimmy Garoppolo is going to be cleared.
Would have been tough sledding against the Kansas City Chiefs had that happened.
You're not liking Josh Johnson v. Patrick Mahomes?
Not my favorite matchup. No. God, man. Can you imagine how much complaining there would have been if that happened?
No. I don't know if it would have been complaining. I think
it would have been all-time complaining. Everybody would have weighed in on how boring the Super Bowl was because the 49ers didn't have a quarterback. No disrespect.
No, you're right. No, you're right. You're right. You're right. That's true. But also, he would have been the single biggest story of the Super Bowl. Like, Josh Johnson's NFL career culminates in this ass-whooping at the hands of the Kansas City Chiefs.
It would have been the Mike Block of the NFL.
Yeah, that's really good. Nice. That's as much as I want to... So, I saw somebody critiquing 49ers content creators on Twitter, which is a bad place to find critiques. But there was a complaint that there's too much talk about the quarterback situation, which, like, okay... So that's as much as we're going to talk about the 49ers quarterbacks today. We're going to talk about other positions.
What a weird thing to complain about.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I get it. But also, there's plenty. Trust me, I peruse other Niners content, and there's plenty of non-QB stuff out there. The QB stuff is just what gets talked about the most on the internet.
It also is what gets clicked on the most. Like, if you're creating written content...
I wrote a state of the 49ers roster about the quarterbacks, and I've done one about the running backs. The quarterbacks one has over double the clicks.
Yeah. Just kind of how it goes.
Yeah. But it's also, like I said, it's also the most interesting part. It's the thing that gets discussed the most. So it's just out there. But that's not what we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about the players that need to step up for the 49ers this year. Players either in new roles or in bigger roles. We know Nick Bosa and Christian McCaffrey and Brandon Ayuk and George Kittle and Fred Warner. All those guys are going to be good and need to be good. But Trent Williams, another good player. But some of the guys on the periphery.
Sure.
And the first one that jumps out to me is pretty obvious, and that's Colton McKivitz, the new presumed starting right tackle. And we talked a little bit about the offensive line. I think, was it last episode or a couple episodes ago? But the need for the offensive line to be better. Oh, it was when we were talking about starters at new positions. And for McKivitz, if he's just going to be what he's been when he's gotten his stints as a starter, That's just, I don't think that's going to be good enough over the course of a 17 game season. He needs to be significantly better than he's been when he has gotten opportunities to play.
So I think the way we talk about, or the way like tackle positions get talked about in the NFL, is so dependent on pass protection, right? Yes. Because you can, it's very easy to watch a game and watch a defensive end beat a tackle and go sack the quarterback on third down, and then make a big hubbubaloo about the, like, about
hullabaloo?
whatever the word is, make a big deal about the right tackle getting beat and him needing to be better. But I would argue, like, for the 49ers, and probably the reason why Mike McGlinchey was sort of undervalued, I think, by the fan base, like, for Colton McKivitz to be really good for the 49ers, he has to be a really good run blocker.
Yes.
And I almost think that's more important than being like a good pass protector. And obviously that's really important, because there are going to be a lot of pass rushers that line up on his side, particularly with Trent Williams on the left side. But so much of what the 49ers do is stresses defense. They stress defenses on the edges in the running game, which sets up play action. Obviously their bubble screen game is really important. There are so many plays where the tackle needs to be good in space and needs to be good at getting to the second level. And the success of one of those plays can be, you know, whether or not an offensive lineman can get to the nickel corner or an outside linebacker or a strong safety and make that seal block, which turns it into, you know, instead of a 3 or 4 yard gain, into a big like 20 yard run,
right?
Which are so important to the 49ers offense, right? Like, the running game, it's not like we're going to run it 40 times and average 3.5 yards a carry and that's how we're going to beat you. Like, the Niners running game is the type of running game where they're really reliant on explosive runs, and teams get so fearful of those explosive runs that that's why play action works. And that's sort of the fundamental philosophical basis of how the offense works. So for McKivitz, I just think he needs, like, the most important thing for him is to be a really good run blocker. Yeah. And if he can do that, then the offense can do what it's typically done, because the 49ers aren't going to be a team that drops back 45 times and has Brock Purdy doing, you know, 5 to 7 step drops 20 times a game. Like, everything's really quick when it comes to the passing game generally. So there aren't a ton of third and long situations, or at least by design, the 49ers are trying to avoid all those. So
I honestly,
my take on McKivitz is that he needs to be, like, run blocking is more important than pass blocking for him.
I couldn't agree more. I think for him to be as good of a pass blocker as Mike McGlinchey is not that big of an ask. He needs to be a little better there to get to that level, but McGlinchey was not an all-world pass blocker.
He was probably league average.
Right, just an adequate pass blocker.
Yeah.
But on those big runs you were talking about, how many times on those runs did you see McGlinchey in the second level sealing off a linebacker or just carrying a defensive end out of the play entirely?
Yeah.
All the time. So that's, I agree completely. And I don't believe that McKivitz is going to be that level of run blocker, at least not right away, but he has to be better there.
They're
and the
showing
Niners must have a pretty immense belief that he can do it.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say. Like, they're showing a lot of faith in Colton McKivitz.
Yeah.
By the way they're sort of treating him, like, no, he's, you know, we would have been fine trading McGlinchey last year because we feel this confident in McKivitz. It's like, all right, like, sure. Mm-hmm. And I guess, you know, they had a similar level of faith in Jake Brendel last year. And Brendel was, I would say, fine to, you know, maybe average to a little bit better than league average at center. Right. Mm-hmm. So, you know, maybe they deserve the benefit of the doubt when it comes to Chris Forrester and his evaluation of the offensive line, because he's ultimately the most important guy in the room when it comes to evaluating offensive line prospects.
Mm-hmm.
And doing internal, you know, roster evaluations and stuff like that. So,
yeah.
I mean, if he's right on McKivitz, like he was Brendel, like, that's a good thing. I think McKivitz needs to be better than Brendel, though. Like, I don't think I think McKivitz needs to be better than a league average right tackle. Because, you know, as good as the 49ers skill guys are, they do need good blocking. Like, it's just fundamental to what they do. And yeah. like they gotta keep their guys healthy and dictate to the defenses when they're getting hit, more so than like taking a bunch. You know, Christian McCaffrey is going to be better off if he's getting tackled by safeties and corners than he is defensive linemen and linebackers. Big picture, right? Like, more often than not. So,
well, and good play at the tackles is what allowed them to roll out Aaron Banks and Spencer Burford and Jake Brendel in the middle. If their interior does not, and their interior might be better this year too. Maybe Banks, Brendel, and Burford all take steps forward this year in their second year as starters, which would be an immense help. But if they're just kind of at the level they were last year, where they were okay but pretty up and down, if McKivitz is also just okay and pretty up and down, that's four spots on the offensive line that are question marks on a play-to-play basis.
I think Banks was good.
Yeah, no, he was good for the most part. But it's still on a snap-to-snap basis. It's like Laken Tomlinson, you just felt, okay, hey, Laken Tomlinson is fine. You're going to forget about him.
Yeah.
But anyways.
Going to be interesting.
Fascinating.
Am I offering one up?
Do you want to? We didn't actually make that totally clear.
Yeah, I have a list here. Do it. I was going through it. You have a list. I was just looking at the roster, and the guys I was coming up with are generally members of the 2022 draft class.
just pick a player and let's kick it around. We have a podcast.
Yeah, Drake Jackson's kind of an obvious one.
That was good. That was the next one on my list.
Yeah, I mean, he's, you know, bulked up, obviously looked the part for spells last year, but then found himself inactive late in the year. And the 49ers sort of indicated that he wore down, et cetera, et cetera. I just, for their defense, like, their defense is already elite, right? Like, and what made their defense elite in 2019 was the fact that, like, when they had Dee Ford on the field, it was just different. It was, if it was third and long and you had Nick Bosa, DeForest Buckner, and Eric Armstead and Dee Ford all on the field, it was like good luck, man. Like, you just weren't beating that team because their pass rush was so good. I would say with Javon Hargrave, Armstead, Bosa, like, you have the potential to be as good as that 2019 team, but you need Jackson to be what Dee Ford was. And I think he has the talent to, but for the defense to be good enough, like, to be elite, historically good, whatever superlative you want to use, I think they need better than just like replacement level play from that other defensive end spot. And obviously, you know, using a second round pick on Jackson last year makes him a really, really important player. And like, maybe Cleveland Farrell's fine, you know, maybe Kerry Hyder's fine, maybe Austin Bryant's fine, but like, if you're playing those guys, you have a clear weak point in your front four. Whereas if you're playing Drake Jackson, you view him, because look, like, Drake Jackson, probably a first round talent. If there wasn't so much turnover in coaching staff and philosophy and scheme at USC while he was there, you know, there are people who believe he was a first half of the first round type talent.
Right.
So if he's able to maximize just that talent and fit in this defense, then he can become something akin to what Dee Ford provided the 49ers when he was on the field and playing at a high level. And so he's just super important. Like, obviously the 49ers defense is good, but if it's going to be like good, like championship level good, like, for the 49ers to win a championship this year, like, Drake Jackson has to be a dude.
Yeah, I completely agree. And there's, so I'm going to tie in another aspect of this. Their depth behind him is like Cleveland Farrell and Austin Bryant and Robert Beal, a fifth round pick from Georgia, and Kerry Hyder, I guess.
Alex Barrett. would like
Alex,
a word.
Dude, 49ers legend Alex Barrett. He's going to be the longest tenured player on the team here soon. The longest tenured practice squad member. But that group, one of those players needs to be good in and of itself. And Ferrell has not been amazing in his career. He's actually been pretty bad, given where he was picked by the Raiders. And then Austin Bryant, same deal. He's hurt, but never really been super productive. Like, they're hoping to get some kind of production out of one of those guys. And that's in the event that Drake Jackson is good. If Drake Jackson is not good, it's not like they have a player that they can fall back on. Last year, Drake Jackson, okay, not super productive. That's fine. Samson Ebukam is there. Charles Amena, who's there. Jordan Willis can play at that spot. Like, it wasn't that big of a deal. In fact, it was such a not big deal, such a small deal. That such a small deal?
Unbig
it was
deal.
So not. It was so not a big deal that he was a healthy scratch at the end of the year. Yeah. And they were fine. So I'm of the belief that Drake Jackson, I'm with you, man. He needs to be really, really good because they don't have the horses behind him to accommodate him struggling again. And that's not just as a pass rusher. He needs to be able to play against the run.
Yeah.
He needs to be a three down guy who isn't a liability in the run game, who's also getting after and pressuring the quarterback. And I think he can. Like, the talent is pretty obvious. He made a couple of plays last year, both in the preseason and the regular season, that just athletically were sick. So you see why the Niners took him. But he has to show on the field now that he made some kind of jump because he's their starter. And there aren't a lot of options to replace him.
Yeah, I agree.
What's up, y'all? I am psyched to announce our new sponsor, Oakley. Express your style and build a look that's made for you, man. I'm legitimately so stoked about this. I've been wearing Oakley sunglasses since I can remember. I had a pair of the Flax for when I played baseball. They were a staple. I had them. Everyone on my team had them. And I've been rocking with Oakley ever since. Oakley is changing the game, and it's time to discover a whole new world of possibilities. Do you run, golf, train, or do you just want to look like your favorite athlete? Debo Samuel's rocking Oakleys. Then you need to get yourself a pair of Oakleys today, suited for everyday eyewear with frames and lenses allowing for an extension of self, an expression of your personality. There's more than meets the eye. Here on Candlestick Chronicles, we are all about look good, play good. Like, we debate what players are going to be good in the NFL based on what numbers they wear. Like, that's how much we believe in look good, play good. And that's why Oakley is the perfect partner for us. We don't leave our house in the morning without our Oakleys. And listen up, because it's officially almost summer, which means you need to upgrade your sunglass game right now. Not today, not tomorrow, because next thing you know, it's fall and you didn't upgrade your sunglass game. Go do that right now. Check out Oakley.com to get yourself a pair today. I've got a pair of Holbrooks. I've had two pairs of Holbrooks in the last 15 years. They are my favorite pair of sunglasses to wear. I don't leave the house without them. But get yourself a pair of Corridors or the Sutros. Both styles I really, really love, especially for summer, whether you're out barbecuing or you're out at the beach. They are just the perfect sunglasses. And did you know that Oakley even offers prism lens technology? So what the hell's that? We're going to learn together. It's proprietary technology to Oakley and available for everyday settings as well. You want to know more? I know you do, because I sure do, and we can do this together. Head on over to Oakley.com and do your own research. As you know us, we love doing your own research on this show. And while you're there, get yourself a pair of everyday glasses that'll be sure to change your look for the better. I'm telling you, people talk about the glow up with facial hair. No, no, no. My glow up came when I bought a pair of Holbrooks. So when you wear Oakley, there really is more than meets the eye. Don't trust me. Try it for yourself. Well, trust me, but also try it for yourself. I've worn a lot of sunglass brands in my life, and I can assure you, Oakley is not only the best looking, but it's the best quality. I told you I've had two pairs of Holbrooks. The one was because I lost them at a wedding, and I didn't even leave the town that the wedding was in before I left with a new pair of Holbrooks. I went to a store that sells sunglasses in the town that I was visiting to get a new pair of Holbrooks before I went home. That's how much I love them. Oakley's not only the best looking, but they're absolutely the best quality out there. So head on over to Oakley.com for more information today.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Weaved in there, Cleveland Ferrell, Austin Bryant are also among the players who need to step up.
So they've lost Jordan Willis, Charles Omenihu, Samson Ebukam.
Yes.
Ebukam. It's a lot of turnover at defensive end. So he needs to be good. Where are you at on Danny Gray?
Oh, another good choice. So Danny Gray is an interesting one because, look, if Danny Gray does not, quote unquote, step up, the Niners are fine. But they drafted him in the third round because he offers an element of speed that their offense just doesn't currently have. It's not like they're a bunch of slow dudes. But what he can do stretching the field horizontally. That's like a slant. Horizontally and vertically, they don't have that on their roster. Even Ray McLeod, God love him, is not the type of fast that Danny Gray is, like a game-changing speed type of guy. So if you take all these weapons the Niners have, and then you factor in, okay, now here's Danny Gray, who when he goes in motion, defenses freak out in the way that when Mecole Hardman's with the Chiefs, when he went in motion, it was like, forget Travis Kelce, forget Tyreek Hill, forget whoever. Watch Mecole Hardman, because he can take it the distance if they get the ball in his hands. And so that's the kind of player I think Danny Gray can be for San Francisco. And I think if he's able to play and be on the field and be effective in those jet sweeps and be effective enough that when he stresses a defense vertically, it opens things up underneath for Deebo Samuel, Brandon Ayuk, George Kittle, whoever. I think he suddenly becomes a really, really valuable member of their offense and gives them a wrinkle that they just don't really have with anybody else on the roster. So I think Danny Gray, if the Niners are going to maximize what they're doing offensively, regardless of who's playing under center, I think it involves a scenario where Danny Gray is playing 20 plus snaps a game.
I agree 100%. I have some trivia for you.
Oh, Danny Gray.
How many games did Travis Benjamin appear for the 49ers in 2021?
Ooh.
That was 10.
Damn.
Point being,
what an idiot.
I mean, he didn't have a catch. He had 5 targets. But do you remember throughout 2021, we're like, man, Travis Benjamin's getting a lot of run.
Yes.
And we're like, unclear why.
What was the game that he ran that vertical route and Garoppolo just badly underthrew him?
That could have been a few different games. But the reason why I bring him up is because Kyle Shanahan has an affinity for a deep threat. It's also a key reason why Marquise Goodwin stuck around for so long and even got paid by the Niners, right? Like, for as much as Kyle Shanahan wants to have a counter to everything he does. Mm-hmm. And a counter to his reliance on the running game is having somebody you have to account for in the vertical passing game. And that's what they brought Danny Gray in to be. He's completely different than Deebo Samuel. He's a different receiver than Brandon Ayuk. Mm-hmm. And I think, to your point, like, adding a legitimate deep threat to this offense could create a lot of space and would just add another tool in Kyle Shanahan's toolbox or a club to his golf bag.
Nice, dude.
And I think the 49ers could use that, because the more dimensions you can have offensively, just the harder you are to defend. And even if Danny Gray is only playing 12 snaps a game, if 2 of those are just plays where you're just trying to hit him deep, then, you know, like whether you complete it or not, like that's something the defense has to account for. And in an ideal world, Brock Purdy is the type of quarterback that can make defenses pay when they're trying to load the box to stop the run and stop everything that happens in front of the defense. Like if you have somebody who can get behind the defense potentially, then that could be really game changing and open things up for all the other playmakers the Niners have. So I think Danny Gray is a really important player because he's really the only one, maybe Brandon Ayuk, but like really the only guy you look at, like George Kittle probably isn't the deep threat that he used to be, right? Debo Samuel's never, he's made some plays down the field, but Debo Samuel, like his game is catching the, like getting the ball in his hands and letting him go, right? Danny Gray represents that deep threat that the 49ers don't really have. And so I'm curious if they're going to be able to maximize him, because I do think that could take the offense to a different level if he does get there.
The thing is, and this is honestly one of my gripes with Kyle Shanahan, is Gray's not going to get on the field if all he is a deep threat. Like right. He's going to have to show that he can impact the game in short and intermediate areas and know where to line up and block. So he is a wrinkle. It's not, oh, Danny Gray's out there, he's going to run straight and run really fast. There has to be more to his presence than that. And I think you're right. Like that's an important part of it. That's an important part of it, but that's going to be there. I mean, we know he can do that, but now he has to do other stuff. And that's to me where he needs to step up.
4.33. Is he the fastest guy in the roster?
He has to be, right?
I think so. Do they have like, they don't have like a 4.2 guy, right?
I don't think so. There aren't that many 4.2 guys in the league.
Yeah. Okay.
In the L.
In the National Football League. Can we do the thing where every time we say the league, we call it the National Football League?
Yeah.
And instead of 100%. Saying ball, we call it a football.
The football. Yeah.
I consume so much golf content, but and I love all of it. But my one gripe is like, we can just call it the course and not the golf course. We can call it the ball and not the golf ball. We can call it the club and not the, like, we can call it a swing and not a golf swing.
It's like, I just started watching Drive to Survive.
Yeah.
And it's the guy from McLaren, Zach Brown. No spoilers on whether he's still with McLaren, but the guy who's with McLaren in the season I'm watching, Zach Brown, their team principal or whatever, he always goes, and I want to see what this guy can do in the race car.
Right.
I'm like, no, it's just the car, dog. We know it's a race car. We're going to go, wait, the car? Which one? Which car? We get it's his race car. We got it. It's the show. Anyways.
Anybody ever like, you know, the next time we play golf, I'm gonna be like, oh, good golf swing.
Oh,
and then that's easy. And then I want you to turn around and be, golf, so what other swing could there have been?
not that for me, it's like not that great of a golf swing, but decent baseball swing.
Oh, there you go.
You know what? That would have been great on a low fastball.
Right.
Go get your ball from three fairways over.
Way to go. Way to go, Oppo.
Keep your hands inside of it. Well done.
Yeah. Really good.
Demetrius Flanagan Fowl is another player I have. And it's kind of weird because they have a million
step up for you, huh?
Yeah. And it's, I think it's more because if he doesn't, I don't know that he has a roster spot. It's Fred Warner, Dre Greenlaw, Oren Burks. And then they drafted Jalen Graham out of Purdue in the 7th round, and they drafted D. Winters out of TCU in the 6th round. And Demetrius Flanagan Fowl has been with the team since 2019. He hasn't really gotten an opportunity to get into a starting role because Azeez Al-Shaair arrived around the same time. At the same time. So, if he's not going to win the starting Sam linebacker job this year, I just don't know if there's room for him on the roster. I know he plays special teams, but I imagine that's something that D. Winters or Jalen Graham can also do.
Yeah, I just don't know if he's really a Sam type. Like, I think he's more of a Will, and because he's a former safety, right?
Well, so
like,
is Dre Greenlaw, but he played Sam while Quan Alexander was there.
Sure, but Dre's a little bit more physical. Like, not that Flanagan Fowles isn't physical, but I kind of think Aziz Alshire is the type of Sam that they're looking for, like just a big thumper, like
physical
more,
with an F.
Yeah, with physical with an F, like more of like what we think of from a linebacker like 10 years ago, somebody who's like 230, 240 pounds, like can run sideline to sideline, but still like be physical and like help set the edge in the running game, right? I just don't know, like Flanagan Fowles was converted to linebacker more for his coverage skills. And he's long, but he's, you know, he's not thick. And I just wonder, because it feels like the times that he has had to play, he's been a target. And right. It hasn't gone
why
well.
He needs
for
to step up.
Right. I just, like, I kind of think Jalen Graham and D Winters are like, are coming for his spot in particular. And maybe even Marcelino McCrary Ball.
Yeah, that's one I forgot.
You know, and maybe he's just a really good special teams player, and maybe that's how he makes it. There's Curtis Robinson too, who the 49ers seem to like.
Get that Stanford DNA in the lineup.
So yeah, I'm with you. Flanagan Fowles, I definitely think needs to have a really good training camp to make the team, because I don't know that I feel like they've added a bunch of, even though they haven't like invested a premium asset into one of those linebacker spots, they've definitely invested a lot,
yeah,
in terms of bringing other guys in.
Maybe this is more of like a make or break thing for him than he needs to step up, because really they just need a linebacker to step up. It doesn't necessarily need to be him. He's just been with the team for 2019 or since 2019, which is I think why I picked him.
Jalen Graham, I'm in. Scott McLuhan, I trust Scott McLuhan when it comes to linebackers, man. I'm
if
in on
Jalen Scotty Mac is in, Kyle Madsen is in. The other one that I've got down here is Deommodore Lenoir.
Okay.
And I say that because I think right now he's the favorite to start across from Tre'Varius Ward. And
he's the only
Mooney
option
Ward
to start.
Yeah. Yeah. Outside of that, it's like Darrell Luter from South Alabama, a fifth round pick, Ambry Thomas, who fell out of favor last year. Isaiah Oliver in his career has been way better in the slot than outside. So it's like Deommodore Lenoir, but he was fine last year. I don't want to turn this into a Deommodore Lenoir isn't good, because he was fine last year, but he was really up and down. Remember that the Raiders game, he really got picked on and he got mossed by 37-year-old AJ Green in week 18 against the Cardinals. And it was very much a, hey, throw it up and he's just going to be bigger than him. That said, Lenoir in the playoffs, I've written about this so much that I've memorized the stats. In three playoff games, he got targeted 13 times. He allowed 5 catches. He had 2 picks, no touchdowns, and I believe allowed a passer rating of like 28.6.
Clutch gene.
He's really good in the postseason. And so, okay, if that was him taking a step and that's the player the Niners are going to get this year, that's awesome. But if all year, if he's what he was in the regular season, where it's just kind of up and down, and okay, there's a game where he allowed 1 catch on 5 targets, but then the next game he gave up 2 touchdowns and was the reason the Niners couldn't get off the field, like that's a pretty significant issue. So I think he needs to take that next step as a starting outside corner in the NFL, which I think he can. We saw it in the postseason, but he needs to step up and make that a season-long type of deal. Not that he's going to give up a 29 passer rating the entire year, but just be more consistently good on that side.
So it brings up an interesting question I have. Is Isaiah Oliver the Niners' third outside corner? The guy that they're projecting to be their nickel?
I think, like if they had to play a game today, yeah, probably.
May 25th. That would be an ugly, ugly football game if they had to play.
It'd be
today.
So bad.
It would be really ugly. Yeah, because like beyond their top three corners, their quote unquote starters, if you count a nickel as a starter, it's not great. Like there's not a ton of depth there. And so I do kind of think Isaiah Oliver, because he was drafted to be an outside guy.
Correct. But he really struggled there.
Yeah, I think he's probably their number three corner. And that because like, I don't know, rookie fifth round pick Darrell Luter Ambry Thomas. I mean, Ambry Thomas, you would think would be that guy. Maybe it's Sam Womack. And, you know, maybe I think Womack's an interesting guy, too, because I think he's probably one of the more versatile corners they have, just in terms of like being a guy that can play inside and outside.
If you told me that Diomedre Lenore did not start week one on the outside, I would say it was Sam Womack that did.
Just came in and took his cookies?
Yeah. That's what he's done his entire career.
Yeah. Except last year.
Sam Womack's a dog, bro. I'm just so in on him as a football player.
Yeah, I'm with you. You know me. You know I'm with you.
I followed you to Sam Womack Island.
Yeah. What are we doing?
The renamed Jimmy Ward Island.
That's still Jimmy Ward Island. I think it's.
Are we still out here?
Yeah, we're out here. Come on. We're out here. We've been living off the fruits of the land for a little bit.
Price of the brick going up.
Like Ambry Thomas, I kind of think he falls into this category of like, you know, be like he's kind of an important guy. Like they're one or two injuries away from like, man, is Ambry Thomas like a starting corner?
You over know, like or under
he was a third round pick 2 years ago.
Over or under half a snap for Dre Kirkpatrick with the 49ers this year.
Under. Dear God. Please be under.
No, I think honestly, maybe Ambry Thomas is the right answer here. Although we're gonna do a make or break pot at some point during the offseason, and I want to put him in that one. But they just need somebody to be good at cornerback.
Outside of their top three guys.
Yeah.
Because they've gone like 4, 5, 6 deep like every year, it feels like. Like there's no it doesn't, I'm going off the top of my head without looking, like it doesn't feel like there's ever been a season where it's like, no, they only really use three corners. Like there's been a lot of turnover, whether it's injuries or guys playing themselves off the field, and maybe that was an Akella Witherspoon issue. But I mean Ambry Thomas. I know Adam Peters liked Ambry Thomas a lot, and he just, you know, last year was not a great look for him.
No, it's really.
So
really
I'm curious to see if Ambry Thomas like comes in to training camp and is like looking like a dude who's ready to like contribute and have a long NFL career, or somebody who's just kind of got drafted and never really asserted himself in the league, in the National Football League.
Right. Can he get his hands on the football?
In the National Football League.
Do you have anyone else? Those are the ones that really jump out. Jake Moody, can you step up this year?
Ty Davis Price?
Ooh, Ty Davis Price is a good one. Or Jordan Mason, either of those two players. Because the Niners' third running back is a sneaky big spot.
Like, you kind of have to just, as good as Elijah Mitchell is, you just kind of have to assume there's a 50% chance he's not going to be available on any given Sunday.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, like you obviously don't want Christian McCaffrey getting 25 carries a week. Like you're in on Christian McCaffrey getting a bunch of touches and being a major part of the offense. But like over the long haul, you would love to have, you know, somebody pushing the pile that's not Christian McCaffrey. And I think Ty Davis Price, particularly as a third round pick, like that's somebody that you would like to see come in and be able to contribute, because like McCaffrey and Mitchell, I think you can make a compelling case that that's the best 1-2, like when healthy in the NFL at running back, right? The best starter and backup combination. Is that a fire take?
Alexander Mattison and Dalvin Cook are pretty good.
Okay. But like Mitchell and McCaffrey,
they're up
like
there. There aren't that many 1-2 punches in the league that are that good.
Yeah. When healthy though. Like, and so if you lose Mitchell, obviously that's a pretty substantial part of it. So like to have Ty Davis Price would be a really, and maybe it is just Jordan Mason, but I, you know, like you would ideally like your draft picks to pan out. Especially when you've had so much trouble drafting, when you're Kyle Shanahan and you feel like you can develop a running game out of thin air while also being unable to draft a running back in the third round or fourth round. Like it's just a weird confounding thing. There are a few like very weird confounding things with Kyle Shanahan, and the running back thing is absolutely one of them.
I agree. I think the ideal 49ers running back situation is McCaffrey's on the field a lot. It lessens Elijah Mitchell's workload where he can stay healthy. But I think the maximized version of the Niners offense has McCaffrey and Mitchell on the field together at various points.
Yeah.
And then
CMC slot receiver. I'm all in.
Yeah. Yeah. And then if they follow their game script, you then lean on one of Ty Davis Price or Jordan Mason to be that quote unquote closer to eat the 10 to 12 carries into the line at the end of the game where you're trying to burn clock.
Yeah. Bring in the fresh legs. Who's willing to run through some faces in the fourth quarter.
Yeah. Well, and it just takes, that's a lot of wear and tear on those runs.
Yes.
Like where a defense just stacking up at the line and you have to go slam into some dudes.
If they could keep Christian McCaffrey under, like, say he's healthy all season, if they could keep him under 200 carries, but still have him like be super productive in the offense, like that would be, that would be sort of ideal, I think.
Yeah.
Because you
agree.
Keep in mind, you need Christian McCaffrey to be one of your best players in the playoffs.
Yeah. Yeah, that's easy. I think too, it's because I don't want to say touches because like his receptions are just going to be dependent on pass rush and not all of them, but there's going to be a lot of checkdowns where it's not like necessarily a designed touch. But he had 329 touches last year. He had a career high 403 in 2019. Jesus. I think the 300 to 330 range is probably about right.
Yeah, 329 last year. Yeah.
But 211 and 11 games with the Niners.
He had 85 catches last year. Is that good?
It's just so casual.
That's crazy. He had 85 catches.
He averaged 19 touches a game with the Niners last year. That's 326 over the whole season.
So 52 catches in 11 games.
About five a game.
Yeah, almost five a game. Not terrible. Sorry, my nose is just deciding to plug up as I'm doing.
That's
math.
All right.
Just sounding like a total nerd over here.
Yeah. Anyways, I don't think I have anyone else.
Christian McCaffrey needs to step up.
Christian McCaffrey has to be better.
No, I got nothing else.
I love that idea that like seventh and offensive player of the year voting. Given what they traded for this guy, he's got to be top three.
Need more. Where was he in the NFC Championship game?
That touchdown he had, I will randomly just watch his touchdown in the NFC title game. I don't do that with very many plays, but it was just such a ridiculous individual effort in a game that it felt like the Niners were destined to lose.
They kind of had a little bit of hope when he scored that one.
Yeah.
It wasn't completely dead yet.
Again, I don't think there's not a universe where they win with Josh Johnson and a quarterback, I don't think. But I would love to see. There's probably not. But look, anything can happen. If Jamie Foxx taught us anything, it's that any given Sunday.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. So, no, I would love to see how that game goes if he doesn't fumble that snap before the half.
Gosh, that's a deep cut. I don't even remember.
The Eagles scored.
Josh Johnson's fumble. Yeah.
And then he just dropped a snap. And the Eagles recovered and then went in and scored again before the half. Yeah. Again, not that they would have won, but if they go down and Deebo Samuel breaks off a big run after the catch and they get a field goal there at the end of the half, I don't know. Maybe it's
there
close,
definitely
maybe
was
it's
a point. I definitely remember a point in the second quarter. Like, damn, the Niners defense is kind of kicking Philly's ass.
They were. Also, I would love. Here's another. Just while we're here, we're just going to relitigate shit. I don't know. I also want to go to the universe where they challenge the very clearly dropped fourth down throw.
Yeah.
On the Eagles' first drive. Because their first drive got extended on that play. And then another ridiculous, like, third down, Hurts backpedaling, throws at A.J. Brown, makes this ridiculous shoe-top catch over the middle. On a there were just, I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay. Wild.
Them grapes be sour.
I kind of wonder, too, if this is, okay, we're going to fast forward into the future now. Or bring it back to the present. I do wonder if that play with Devontae Smith down the sideline where they didn't challenge it, if that changes Kyle Shanahan's philosophy on challenging plays at all.
It just starts doing it more willy-nilly. You're almost maybe to the
more,
point.
Maybe not more willy-nilly, but like that's a huge spot, dude. That's yeah, a fourth down. That wasn't a second down. That was your defense got off the field.
Yeah. It would have been like, I mean, it was a 7-point swing.
Yeah.
Basically. I'm almost to the point where, like, if you see an offense, like, rushing to the line of scrimmage after a play like that, you just challenge, sort of, no matter what.
Or just burn a timeout.
Yeah.
I mean,
especially in the first half.
Challenge.
Yeah, especially in the first half. Like, first half timeouts are decidedly less important than second half timeouts.
And especially, like I said, if that was a second or third down play, fine. But, like, that was a fourth down, man. And you had your players on the field like, hey, he dropped that.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean,
Shanahan's pretty stubborn, though. So
if we're doing this, I really think Kyle Williams should not have muffed those punts.
Wow. Subscribe, rate, review, everybody.
If we're relitigating important conversations.
Yo, Roger Craig! No. Anyways.
Garrison Hurst should not have hurt his knee. That's bullshit.
Underrated what if in 49ers history. They might have won the Super Bowl. Right?
They were pretty good. That was 98?
Yeah, that was the catch two.
Damn, AstroTurf game. Mm. All right. Let's get out of here.
Yeah, this has gone on way too long. Thanks, everybody who stuck around. Subscribe, rate, review. We'll be back next week with more.
See ya.